This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 21st, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 352. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, in less than 2 years, Vancouver and 15 other cities in the US, Canada, and Mexico will host the FIFA World Cup 26. Hordes of ticketless fans invaded Miami's Hard Rock Stadium before the July 14th Copa America final. Should Vancouverites be worried that hooligans will crash the nearly $600 million party at BC Place Stadium? A Burnaby sports writer who has attended 7 World Cups says no. Alfie Lau joins me to talk about his experience at World Cups. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. You may have seen the chaos out of Miami's Hard Rock Stadium on July 14th that delayed kickoff of the Copa America final between Argentina and Colombia. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people without tickets invaded the stadium to see living legend Lionel Messi. Just like Euro 2020 in London and the 2022 Champions League in Paris. In less than 2 years, Vancouver, Toronto, and Seattle, and 13 other cities in the US and Mexico, will host the FIFA World Cup 26. Should we be worried about crowd control? Well, organizers at Vancouver City Hall are secretive, but crowd control is top of mind. Regular readers of the Breaker.News will know that they are already planning to repeat the 2010 Winter Olympics security zone around Eastern Falls Creek. It will not be business as usual in June and July 2026 for people who live, work, and shop in the area around BC Place Stadium. To learn more about the fans' perspective at a World Cup, I called upon World Cup traveler Alfie Lau of Burnaby, who has attended the world's biggest single sport event across 4 decades. Alfie, what was going through your mind as you watched or tried to watch the Copa America final, which was delayed by well over an hour on last Sunday?
Well, as a veteran of 7 World Cups, everything since 1998, it was weird to see an event not get started on time. I mean, I have a lot of complaints with FIFA, but they get things started on time all the time. That being said, they spend a lot of money organizing and security-wise. So not surprised that FIFA puts on pretty good events, but CONMEBOL, CONCACAF, UEFA, well, it's a little bit different, right? Because you can't forget there was a Champions League final in Paris just a couple years ago. We had the same sort of problem, guys jumping gates as well, too. So those sitting on the Holy Lau gates there don't have a lot to stand on. So I'm lucky. I've never had these problems of my own, right? But that being said, wow, I've walked a long ways to get to games, right? I was shocked actually to see how close the security perimeter was in Miami there, like literally from where the people were to where the gates were. I've been to that stadium. I was at there, the old Joe Robbie for a baseball game about a decade ago. And, it was weird to see people, the gates and where the people were that close. For example, FIFA, well, you're 2-3 kilometers away. I'll use St. Petersburg in Russia in 2018. The transit station was a 3-kilometer walk away from the stadium. And that 3 kilometers, both sides were walking through a park lined with Russian police officers. So, different security perimeter than you'd expect. But in Qatar for the final and in Lusail there, there's a transit station right at the stadium, but you can't walk from the station right to the stadium. You have to walk around the stadium to get to the one entry point. I mean, that's the thing that FIFA does really well. You get funneled to one major entrance point, no matter where you're coming from. So using Vancouver's example, imagine if going to a World Cup game in Vancouver, everyone had to get off at Main Street Station instead of stadium. And the only entrance was on Georgia Street. So you'd have to walk all the way around to get to Georgia Street to get into stadium. That's how FIFA does it, right? I mean, you just put a 1 to 2 kilometer security perimeter around the stadium and one major entrance point. So I laugh at some of the many walks I've had to make when I could see the stadium in Fortaleza, Brazil. I remember walking in 100 degree weather for about 40 minutes just to get to the entrance gate, even though I could see it the whole time. So that's probably what we have to look forward to when the World Cup comes here in 2 short years' time.
What are the steps to get into the security perimeter, to then get into the stadium itself, then to get to your seats?
I'll use Qatar as an example. Qatar was the first tournament that I've been to when it was all electronic tickets. Right? Before that, with paper tickets, it's a different thing because, you know, well, electronic tickets and everything was Bluetooth enabled. And again, I'm a bit of a technological idiot, so I didn't really actually know how this worked. But once you got within about 100 meters of the gates in Qatar, your phone would ding, your ticket would become active. Right. And so at that point, you enter what we call the bicycle racks, the zigzagging sort of first entrance there. And you don't get scanned there, but everyone, that's where security first tells you that, you know, you need to have your ticket on your phone. And by that point, you're about 500 meters from the gates. Haven't done any scanning, haven't done anything at all, but that's sort of like the preliminary screening. Like once you're walking through the zigzagging gate there, you better have a ticket, because once you get out of that, that's when you go through the first security checkpoint, right? And that's where you go through the wanding, you put your bag through, you go through the metal detector, right? And at that point, you're sort of at the front gate of the stadium. You're still, again, where they set these gates are, you're still 500 meters from the actual stadium. They set them so far away. So once you go through the wanding process, then you actually go to the actual scanning of your ticket. So think of it as three separate checkpoints, and then by then you're allowed in, right? So very tough to bum rush the gates, because you can't sort of bum rush the first zigzagging part there. Once you have to go through security, I mean, and you haven't even scanned a ticket yet. I mean, that's so, and it's quite an orderly process. And maybe because I showed up so early, right? I mean, most gates open 4 hours ahead of time, and so, you know, I'd show up three and a half hours ahead of time, and you'd be through in half an hour, right? I mean, so that's probably the biggest change from electronic tickets. Back in previous days with paper tickets, this way. You want to get in the stadium as quick as possible because, you know, if you have a ticket, only bad things can happen to you outside the stadium, right? And so in Russia, there wasn't the three levels of security there, which is the two levels. You're basically, you get to the gate where you get wanded and you go through the metal detector, and then you scan your ticket through. So electronic tickets, they sort of added that third level of security. I don't know what it was like at the Copa there, but I mean, I'm pretty sure that, I mean, I haven't seen paper tickets for almost any sport now, right? It's almost everything. I know the Euro tickets in Germany were all electronic there, so... So it seemed awfully weird to me that you would have guys even trying to bum rush the gates there, simply because with the wonders of modern ticketing, if you don't have hear that magical ding on your phone there, I mean, you shouldn't even be there.
Stadiums in other parts of the world, in Europe and Asia, are built on large footprints, and they're often not close to downtown. The American stadiums, football stadiums, whether it's MetLife or AT&T Stadium, they're surrounded by very large parking lots. They have the luxury of space. Now, Vancouver is unusual among the 16 host cities for 2026, where you've got a stadium which is right smack dab in the middle of downtown, close to some important transportation networks, but also surrounded by towers, high rises and low rises, by office towers, by several condo towers, by a hotel, a casino. And it doesn't really have a front door, a grand entrance like many other stadiums do. A lot of people still go through Terry Fox Plaza at the foot of Robson Street, the de facto main entrance, but it doesn't have much space. So what do you think is going to happen in 2026 when you need to get people into the secure zone ahead of the game to go through those processes for the mag and bag, the ticket check.
I'll give you an example of, I was racking my brain for sort of the furthest security perimeter I'd ever experienced. And if I go back to the 2004 Ryder Cup in Detroit, so Oakland Hills, the golf course, is where the actual tournament was, but everyone had to park and ride in from the Silver Dome, which is about 5 kilometers away. But that's where you have to scan your ticket in. So the security perimeter was at the Silver Dome. I mean, with a golf tournament, everyone's coming in off of shuttle buses, so there was no way to get in with a private car or with transit. But that's how far you can have a security perimeter. And I sort of, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, I think that, you know, I can see Main Street Station being the main station in, right? So a lot of walking. I mean, Stadium Station is just too close, and there's no way to set up a perimeter, especially with all the overpasses and all the other things that are going on right in that sort of area there. Most places, it's a 1 to 2 kilometer security perimeter. And I used the Super Bowl from 2015 in Phoenix. I'd been to a game, a regular season game, earlier that season, and the perimeter was, there was no perimeter, right? So I could park at a church across the street and I'd be right into my seat within 10 minutes. I tried to get that same parking for the Super Bowl in 2015. Well, that wasn't available. That was inside the perimeter. So we were about 2 kilometers away was the closest we could park. And then you end up walking all the way around. So all these big events, no matter whether you're in a downtown or in the middle of nowhere, they set it between 1 and 2 kilometers away. And so either they'll have park and ride lots where people will get on the shuttle buses, that the buses will be allowed inside that perimeter, but it's a secure bus once you get on, right? With a transit station, you're going to be walking a long ways, right? And that's almost universal for almost every venue I've been to in the last 3-4 World Cups, whether they're downtown, whether they're in the middle of nowhere. It's get used to the walking, right? It's and if you remember during the Olympics, they had the VIP, the VVIP, the super VVIP, right? I mean, that's FIFA does the same thing, right? So if you're rich and famous and know people, you can get around that. But Joe Schmo, like me and you, we're going to be a long ways away. And it's almost the worst thing is you can actually see the stadium, right? And the direct route would be 200-300 meters. But you walk around stadiums, right? So think of that as that way. So using BC Place as an example, getting off at Main Street and either walking all the way around Olympic Village and coming across the Canby Street Bridge, or walking all the way around Chinatown and then Granville and then all the way around to Georgia to come in that way, right? Even though the stadium would be so much easier to get to. You just walk along the water around Science World to get there, right? So that's what I fully expect. Because, I mean, Seattle has the same problem too. Seattle has their stadiums right downtown, lots of south of downtown, so less of the commercial than Vancouver has. But, I mean, enough buildings and facilities they have to protect. But I have a lot of faith in the states being able to do this, because I mean, NFL games are pretty big things, right? And so they manage to figure this out 8-9 times a year, every year. They don't have these sort of problems. So what happened in Miami, a bit surprising. I mean, because again, I fully expect this to happen in a Copa held in South America, but a Copa held in North America, where we have all the North American security protocols, seemed awfully interesting to me.
I've already confirmed there will be closures in the vicinity of the stadium on every match day, and what they call match day minus one, which is the day before each match day. So you add that up, that's 14 days in June and July 2026, where if you live or work in that part of False Creek and downtown around BC Place Stadium, you're going to have to make some alternate arrangements. You're going to have a harder time getting home, leaving home, getting to the office, leaving the office, if you even want to be down there around that time. Of course, you might want to have tickets to the game if you can get tickets to the games and be part of the whole crowd. What are you expecting in terms of ticket prices? Of course, there's been no word yet from the FIFA organizing committee yet about ticket prices or tickets on sale. That'll come later. But from your experience in buying World Cup tickets, what are the prices like and what is the process to get tickets?
Well, the one good thing about FIFA selling the tickets on their own is that they don't gouge the consumer as badly as they could. And I mean, I hate giving FIFA any props, but one of the Copa's big problems with it was they let each individual city set its own ticket prices. And almost everything went through Ticketmaster. And so the tickets were allowed to go on sale through Ticket Exchange and the different resale sites there. So the prices were unbelievable. That being said, some of these last World Cups have been held in places where the locals don't have a lot of money. So it's almost like an artificially low pricing model had to be put in place for Qatar, because Qatari locals and Russian locals and South African locals and Brazilian locals don't have the disposable income that North American locals have, right? So basically, the gist of it is that there's category one, category two, category three pricing for foreigners. So category one is the most expensive ticket there. And so I'll use the World Cup final last one as an example. If you could get a ticket from FIFA for the last World Cup final in Doha, it was about $2,500 Canadian for the final. So that's in line with what it would cost if you could get a Super Bowl ticket. Actually, Super Bowl tickets are a bit cheaper if you can get it from source, right? Then category two. So category one is everything along the sideline, no matter how high you go. So think of whether you're in row one or row 301, way up on the top there. Everything's category one on the side. Category two is the corners. Category three is directly behind the net. Okay, so category two tickets are about $1,600 for that last World Cup final. Category three, about $900, right? There's a special category four ticket, which is only available to locals. And don't ask me how, I don't even know how I did it myself, but I actually got a category four ticket for the World Cup final. So I know exactly how much I paid for the World Cup final in 2022. It was 289.50 Canadian. So under $300 Canadian. That was completely by luck. I don't think I even did anything wrong. I think I got it 4 hours before game time, probably because they didn't have any. My surmising is that $300 to us isn't a lot of money, but to locals, that's a lot of money. So they're literally, if I had no locals left who could afford that, well, the ones who could afford it already had it. So they just put it out for regular sale to anybody who was lucky enough to go on the portal. And I was lucky enough to go on the portal there. But that gives you an idea of what the pricing is for the final. For regular games, I paid anywhere between 100 and $400 for opening round games. And then for knockout games, the prices kept on going up. The second round was about 250 for the cheapest ticket for the round of 16s, four 500 for the quarterfinals, and then about $1,000 for the semifinal. These are category one prices, right? So there's a lot of there's a lot of variety in terms of pricing there. But the thing is, they priced way too many tickets at category one pricing. So remember, everything along the side, right? So the whole length of the field, whether you're standing, I'll use football chronology, at the 50-yard line or along the goal line, or how high or low you are, that's all category one seating. Only in the corners and behind the net does it become category two and category three. So I mean, I've been lucky enough to get tickets direct from FIFA for the last six World Cups, right? So didn't have to go through brokers or anything like that. And the pricing has been quite reasonable. They offer packages for whether you wanted to see all the games in Vancouver or whether you want to just follow your team. Lots of options. It's much more complicated than than just like I want one game for that. I mean, like we're used to buying single game tickets for events here. Well, that's really tough to do in FIFA. Everything is sold in packages, whether it's tied to the team or tied to the venue. But if you can get them, the pricing isn't horrific. The bigger problem. So, for example, say you pick a team like a Holland, and you want to see the first five games they play. Okay, so in a 32-team World Cup, that would be the first three knockout games, and if they advance, the round of 16 game, the quarterfinal game. The biggest package is a seven-game pack, which would take you right to the final. I had a Holland 7 game pack in 2014, and that was for a pair of tickets all the way to the final. It was just under $5,000 Canadian. Okay. But that included the final, whether Holland made it or not. Okay. So, if you're going to commit to buying tickets to the World Cup, don't expect really be able to get just one game here or one game there. You're going to have to buy a strip for either a venue or to follow a team. And so, for example, that Holland pack meant there was a lot of traveling involved. So the seven games, if I remember correctly, were in Sao Paulo, Porto Alegre, Salvador, Fortaleza, back to Salvador, then to Sao Paulo to Rio. Okay, those were the seven venues. Okay, well, if you look at a map, Sao Paulo and Rio are reasonably close together. But Fortaleza is a long ways away to the north. Salvador is a long ways away to the north. And Porto Alegre is so far south, you're almost in Argentina. You're on the Argentina-Brazil border there, right? So you got to commit to that. So if you're going to buy a pack like that, and yes, FIFA says everything can be regionalized, but I can see tickets for a team that you choose, one game. So Canada's games, Canada pack there. Well, two of the games are in Vancouver, one in Toronto. Well, how do you get back and forth between Vancouver and Toronto, right? You got to fly. There's no driving's gonna take you forever. There's no train. Well, there is a train. Won't get you there in time, right? So the distances traveled are going to be pretty massive. I've been to seven World Cups. A guy I traveled with, who since sadly has passed away, had been to 12 World Cups. And he tells me the worst World Cup he went to, and it's not even, he can't even tell who the second worst one was. Well, the States in 94 was the worst one by far, just because of the travel involved. He said, yeah, one day he had a game in Orlando, and the next he had to be in New York for his second game. So they had to be in San Francisco 2 days later. Right? I mean, the distances are just obscene, right? And I mean, it's not like Russia's a small country, but Russia's my second favorite World Cup because the travel was unbelievable. They gave free transportation through the whole country if you had tickets to games, right? So we rode trains. I mean, we had the potential to ride a train for 23 hours. Right, from Kaliningrad to Moscow and then to Nizhny Novgorod. But we chose the 2-hour flight instead. It was a much better idea than that. Right? So so back to your original question on ticket prices. There's a little something for everyone, but it's a tough get. There are some secrets to getting some of the best tickets. You know, I don't want to give away all my secrets. You know, there's a way I've got to seven World Cups. Can't be giving all the secrets away. But FIFA doesn't gouge as bad as they could, right? And that's faint praise, I guess. But, I mean, Copa, part of their problem was that they charged as much as they could for the tickets that they sold. And the South Americans, whether they had the money or didn't, I mean, I was shocked when I was in Qatar how many Argentinians were there, because Argentina's economy is not doing great. Yeah, these people who had stayed basically for a month following their team, I'm not sure how they paid for it, but they were finding ways to make it work, right? I mean, some of the rooms we're staying in, they're built for two people, but I know for a fact one of the rooms, I saw 10 people in that room, right? Because the longer Argentina stayed, the more some of these guys kept on extending their trip, right? But they're getting a room wasn't that easy, but their friends helped them out. And so that room, you'd have two beds, but, you know, people sleeping on the floor, people sleeping in the bathroom, people sleeping on top of each other, underneath each other. It was just so, so FIFA, for all its faults, ticket price gouging is not one of them, hard to believe.
Looking forward to 2026, looking back at the Copa America, Alfie Lau from Burnaby, a World Cup traveler, thanks again for joining us.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Taiwan politicians react to Trump's suggestion of paying for U.S. protection.
Premier Chu Jung-tai says Taiwan willing to up commitment. No comment from Foreign Ministry, Presidential Office. Chu noted that Taiwan has increased its defense budget and lengthened its compulsory military service period as part of its commitment to defense. Chu said that Taiwan is grateful for U.S. assistance and that this has increased Taiwan's sense of shared responsibility for regional peace and stability. In Kyoto news, Japan PM Fumio Kishida apologizes to victims of forced sterilizations. In what is labeled as the worst human rights violation in Japan's post-World War II history, the law allowed people with intellectual disabilities, mental illnesses, or hereditary disorders to be sterilized without their consent to prevent the birth of inferior offspring. In front of more than 130 plaintiffs, lawyers, and supporters, Kishida said, quote, "It is with deep regret that at least 25,000 people have suffered the grave harm of being sterilized under the eugenics law between 1948 and 1996. In Hong Kong Free Press, asking for donations and exercise in free speech, Hong Kong democracy advocate Chan Po Ying tells court. Chan, the chair of the League of Social Democrats, was in court on Tuesday to appeal her conviction over collecting money in public without a permit in 2021.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In Willamette Week, doctors say Providence's sale of its hospital's testing labs has endangered patients. The sale of Providence's and Legacy's labs comes as a wave of consolidation has washed over the healthcare industry, causing states across the country, including Oregon, to pass laws to stop it. Two of Portland's three largest hospital systems announced last year that they were selling their testing laboratories to a multinational North Carolina corporation named LabCorp. In Crosscut, wildlife advocates skeptical of Washington wolf count. As the state considers removing the species endangered status, some argue that the Colville tribe's recent population estimate is implausibly high. At the end of 2022, the Department of Fish and Wildlife's report of documented wolves counted 35 on Colville lands, with 157 elsewhere. A year later, the tribes reported an additional 23 wolves, while the entire rest of the state saw an increase of only 16. The final statewide totals are slightly higher, as the state increases its projections to account for lone wolves. And in the Breaker.News last week, judge dismisses defamation case about Burnaby Sports Center donations. And TikTok Canada exec talked to Elections BC about upcoming election. Read those headlines and the stories behind the headlines in the Breaker.News.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate. So you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar. Brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
the athletes, the coaches, the officials, the volunteers, and others who make the BC Summer Games what they are. Maple Ridge is host of the 2024 BC Summer Games, which began July 17th and end July 21st. For British Columbia's top athletes, it's the first step on the long journey to the Olympics.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 21st, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 21st of July in 1925, in Dayton, Tennessee, high school teacher John Scopes was found guilty of teaching about evolution? Tennessee lawmakers had made it illegal to teach anything but creation in public schools. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News on X, formerly Twitter, for news as it happens. and you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.